Coming to you from the heart of Silicon Valley,
this is CUDA Confidential,
the official podcast of the San Jose Barracuda, AHL affiliate of the San Jose Sharks. Now, here's your host, Nick Nolenberger.
After a 4-2 win on the road on Sunday in El Segundo against the Ontario Reign, the Barracuda returned back home to Northern California on Tuesday to kick off their final homestand of 2021, beginning with a matchup against the Bakersfield Condors. Just 3:08 into the first period on Tuesday, Barracuda forward Evan Weinger would inadvertently run into veteran defenseman Kevin Gravel with a high hit, leading to a melee at center ice. Resulting from it all was 41 combined minutes of penalties, including a game misconduct for Brad Malone, captain of the Condors.
Second stint within the Oilers organization. Gravel is hurt, and it's going to be a penalty against Evan Weinger, and going after him is Kemp. And, you know, that was a weird little play. Looked very inadvertent. Gravel shake it up, and now we're going to get a little bit of a melee. As now Brad Malone's going after Evan Weinger. He's got his helmet off, and Malone is the lines.
After nearly a 10-minute break, as the officials sorted out all the penalties, we finally resumed, and the Condors were on a 5-minute power play. On the man advantage, Adam Cracknell would score at 5:49 to give Bakersfield a 1-0 lead.
So Bakersfield will bring it up ice from right to left. Seth Griffith, the former Manitoba Moose forward. Left wing side for Benson. Rink wide. And it's put in. Cracknell scores. A rink-wide pass by Tyler Benson right on the tape of Adam Cracknell. And the 35-year-old Cracknell is up to double digits. It's his 10th goal of the year.
Then at 16:49, Barracuda forward Jaden Holmgewax would make it goals in consecutive games as he snapped one in on the power play to tie it up at 1-1.
Right off wall, Shumalovsky. Played it to the low slot, comes free. Holmgewax scores. Jaden Holmgewax bar down, and the Barracuda tie the game up on the power play.
Back on the man advantage, Bakersfield Seth Griffith would cash in again, and the Condors would take their lead back, going up 2-1.
Five players on each side come together as here comes Griffith's shot, scores. It's a power play goal for Seth Griffith. And the Condors retake the lead 55 seconds into their power play. The time of the goal at 18:16. It's a 2-1 lead now for Bakersfield.
After a scoreless second period, the Barracuda, still down by a goal, would tie the game up as Ivan Chukovich would find Jake McGrew on the back post at 11:57.
Kesselring for Bakersfield around the horn. Pinching Magna, centers in front, Latunov, leaves to Chukovich, near side, tipped in, they score! McGrew has goals in back-to-back games, and we are all tied up at 2-2.
And then Joel Shellman would score to give the Barracuda their first lead at 17:48.
Right off the draw, Shumalevsky's shot turned aside, Rodriguez to the near side, Shellman, he scores! Shumalovsky finds Joel Shellman on the back door, and the Barracuda have their first lead of the game, and it comes at 17:48 of the third.
Sasha Shumalovsky would secure the win with an empty netter at 18:59. Shellman had been assigned to the American Hockey League earlier in the afternoon and finished the game with an assist and the game winner as Shumalovsky racked up a career-best 3 points. Here was Barracuda head coach Roy Sommer after the game.
Well, it was such a scrambly game. The first period, 11, we had 11 penalty minutes against us, and then the next period wasn't much better. You know, it was just kind of a hard to get everyone in the flow. But I thought the third period, we talked about that. We go, hey, we have a good set, a good third, and we do things right, get pucks in behind them, and just settle down a little bit, that we'll be fine. And you know, we got opportune goals, and you know, on two great plays, the one on McGrew and that Checo made, and then the backdoor play, just really outstanding plays. But I thought we stuck with it in the third, and you know, another comeback for us, which you like to see. Yeah, I think the line that, you know, we talked about a lot with Passer Chuck and Galley and Berge. You know, they just couldn't get in the flow, and I didn't play him a lot in the third. Just be, you know, I like to roll four lines, but it was just so hard to get into it for him that, you know, we kind of went down to third to three lines. But you got to kind of manage him, and it's the same thing that penalty killers, that a team where your team's a lot of power play, they're sitting a lot, and just kind of how the way things go. You know, you're fortunate if you get to do everything.
After two full days off, the Barracuda were back on the ice on Friday for the first of consecutive games against the Henderson Silver Knights, AHL affiliate of the Golden Knights. After Silver Knights defenseman Ryan Murphy was called for hooking at 16:55, Chmielewski would go back to work with his first of two in the first period on the power play, the first coming at 7:16.
Faceoff is won by the Barracuda in the offensive zone. Urso hands off left side. Shellman rink wide for Chmielewski. He scores! Chmielewski sneaks one just inside of the netminder in the post, and the Barracuda have a power play goal.
Then at 13:28, Chmielewski would do it again.
Now for Shellman, left half wall, back to the point for Russo. He'll walk the line, gives it back for Shellman, winds up, the save is made, it was behind the goaltender, and touched home, Chmielewski, he scores! And Chmielewski's got two power play goals here in the opening frame, and the Barracuda take a 2-0 lead.
Former Sharks prospect Danny O'Regan would cut into the lead with his 11th of the year, also on the power play.
Show games to start the year as we're back underway. Henderson on the power play here, but he gets to play AHL games, and now he gets to come back. He would be too young, really, in a normal situation to be able to play in the AHL, but he's going to play in the American League. Here's a shot by O'Regan off the top of that left dot, and he beats Melnichuk through the wickets, and Henderson is on the board on the 5-on-3 power play, and Danny O'Regan, who's really been hot as of late, finds the back of the net, the time of the goal at the 16-minute mark.
In the second, with the Barracuda still up 2-1, at 7:35, O'Regan would do it again. Again on the man advantage.
Chaz Redekop trying to support Weingart's fist free. And here's an opportunity for Henderson. There's a shot. Save is made by Melnichuk. It's behind him, and it's in the back of the net. And we are tied up at 2-2. A shot hits Melnichuk, looked like around that left shoulder, and just kind of butterflied over him.
Now tied at 2-2, Maxim Latunov will keep the Barracuda perfect on the power play with his 10th of the year, late in the second period at 18:54.
With the puck, will carry it up ice from right to left. Tried to drop for Latunov, pulled it free. Here's a chance, shoots, he scores! Latunov was dropped to a knee, but not before he sniped it inside the far post, and the Barracuda, the power play is cooking.
Just 55 seconds into the third, rookie forward Brandon Coe would make it 4-for-4 on the power play as he ripped in his first pro goal to give the Barracuda a 4-2 lead.
An opportunity to widen the gap between themselves and the Eagles for the fourth spot in the division. Pashnuk with the puck. Left flank now for Coe. Shut! He scores! Brandon Coe, his first professional goal, and the Barracuda are 4-for-4 on the power play.
But the Silver Knights just wouldn't go away as Pavel Dorofeev made it 4-3 at 8:43. But not before Joel Schulman would score at 10:41 to push the lead back up to 2.
But a good defensive recovery by the Barracuda. And the game remains at a 4-3 lead. Chmielewski, he's got two tonight. To the right side, Milosz lofts it over everybody. Into the zone, there's a shot! They score! Milosz with the Hail Mary up and over everybody for Chmielewski.
But the Silver Knights would claw back into the game after the Barracuda went back up by a pair. At 13:30, Jonas Ronberg would put one in. And then at 17:55, Jack Dugan, the AHL's top rookie, would tie it up. But a late night's penalty would prove too costly, as Shellman would make it 5-for-5 on the power play with his second of the game in 1928.
On the power play, Russo near dot for Holbgewax. Pressure being applied. Forced off the puck, but supported by Chmielewski. Spins off pressure. Hands off Russo. Left side for Shellman. Lights up! He scores! Shellman! Bowman does it again, and the Barracuda take their lead back. They are 5-for-5 on the power play.
Shelmwood would then complete the hat trick with an empty netter at 19:43, and the Barracuda would hold on for a 7-5 win.
For five on the power play tonight, a new franchise record. They had scored four power play goals, and Shelmwood's going for the hat trick. He scores! Joel Shelmwood gets the empty net hat trick, and the Barracuda go up by two with just 16.1 seconds remaining in regulation.
Shelmwood finished the game with a single game franchise best 5 points, 3 goals and 2 assists. The Barracuda also set a franchise record with 5 power play goals, and defenseman Robbie Russo set a single game franchise record with 4 assists, all coming on the power play. Sasha Shomolevsky, who had 3 points on Tuesday for a personal best, surpassed that total with 4 points on Friday as he picked up 2 power play goals and also had 2 helpers. Here was Barracuda head coach Roy Sommer after the historic victory.
Yeah, I mean, actually, you know, you got to give Chaser a lot of credit. Like, he, you know, was kind of struggling a little bit there. And, you know, he took some clips out with him and had, you know, did some stuff with the guys. And, you know, you could say what you want, but, you know, they reacted in a positive way. And, I mean, 5-for-5 on the power play just doesn't happen that often. And, like, the last time I can remember it happened against us was when Pominville was playing in Rochester, you know, when he was with Buffalo, and that was 100 years ago. So it doesn't happen much. Had some guys with 4 or 5 point games, and, you know, hey, special teams was what it was all about tonight. It was crazy. I just think it's everyone's in their kind of groove, and we don't have a lot of extras. Everyone's playing. Everyone's getting nice. Like I said, you know, we talked about it before, but, you know, positionally, everyone's a lot better. They know what's going on. You know, we still, I think this is game 32, and we've had 30 games with different lineups. But, hey, you got to give it to the guys. You know, they come in and they, you know, they go to work and they stay with it. You know, our last 3 games, I mean, the Ontario one, not so much. But the Bakersfield game, we're down 2-1. We stay with it and end up 4-2. And, you know, they very well could have said when they tied it up, like, hey, that's it. And but Maxey drives the net, draws a tripping penalty, and PP went to work again.
On Saturday, the Barracuda continued their 4-game homestand, looking to extend its winning streak to a season-long 4 games. But an early 5-on-3 power play for the Knights would set the Barracuda behind just 4:36 into the first, as Jack Dugan would pot his 7th of the year.
But Henderson's ace on the power play, Dylan Sakura, not available right now up top with the big club in the Vegas Golden Knights, but he's tied for 2nd in the AHL. Here's a one-timer off the left side by Dugan, and he scores. Just saying, Sakura is tied for 2nd with 6 power play goals. Well, Jack Dugan swipes one in, and the Silver Knights score just 20 seconds into that 5-on-3, so they'll still have a good amount of power play time, 1:40 of power play time.
Then Paul Cotter would make it 2-0 Knights at 9:30 of the first.
It's going to be scooped up in neutral by Paul Cotter. He'll work his way in. Toltrak scores!
At 14:39 of the opening frame, Dugan was back at it with his 2nd of the opening period as the Knights took a commanding 3-0 lead.
6 minutes to go in this opening frame, live from the SAP Center at San Jose. So Pahal back in his own end for the Silver Knights. Headman feed, spots a man. Here comes Dugan moving and trying to get to the backhand, and he scores. Jack Dugan has 3 points in this opening period. He put his head down like a running back and simply barreled his way into the net. He went into the net, the puck followed him, and it is a 3-0 opening period for the Silver Knights.
In the second, Reed Duke would make it 4-0 Silver Knights at 14:55, all but sealing the win, as the Barracuda managed just 16 total shots in the game, eventually falling 4-0. Just their 2nd shutout loss of the year and 2nd against Henderson. After Saturday's loss, the Barracuda looked to get back on track on Monday in the final regular season home game of 2021. And at 4:50 on the power play, Shemilevsky would pot his 4th goal over his last 4 games and his team best 4th power play goal to give the Barracuda an opening period lead.
Back to the right point. Shumalovsky carries it down the boards. That's some real estate. Shot! He scores! Shumalovsky, who had 7 points over a two-game stretch on Tuesday and Friday, was held off the score sheet on Saturday, but he's back on the board.
But the Condors would answer back with consecutive power play goals in the first. First, Seth Griffith, and then the captain, Brad Malone.
To the near side for Cracknell to Gildon. His shot wide, came off the back wall, and they score. It's Brad Malone, the captain. He scored 3 times on Wednesday. He's got another one here as he banks it off of Melnichuk.
At 17:32 of the second, Maxim Latunov will get his 11th of the year to tie the game up at 2-2, also on the power play.
Recovered, though. Shumalovsky, right side, one-timer! They score! Latunov, in the waning seconds of the power play, snipes one past Stuart Skinner, and we're tied at 2-2.
But just 2 minutes into the third, Bakersfield's Devin Brousseau managed to give the Condors back its lead at 3-2. But down by a goal, and down by a man, Joel Shulman, who was named the CCM AHL Player of the Week earlier in the day, raced up the ice shorthanded and beat Condors goalie Stuart Skinner to tie the game up at 3-3.
Right wall, Weinger shadowing. Pass intercepted by Shulman. Here comes Shulman down the left wing side. He's turning on the speed, works his way in, he scores! Shulman, the knuckle puck, beats Skinner shorthanded, and the Barracuda to have tied it back up as Shulman continues his white-hot stretch.
Unfortunately, Cooper Marody would then score his AHL best 20th of the year before Condors captain Brad Malone answered Shulman's shorthanded goal with a shorty himself at 14:33, all but sealing the 5-3 win.
They've already got 2 power play goals, but here comes Brad Malone shorthanded. He had a shorty on Wednesday, works down the wing, and he scores! Brad Malone picks the short side corner. It's a 5-3 lead for the Condors.
The Barracuda finished the regular season in Las Vegas on May 8th and 11th. You can listen to broadcast coverage on May 8th on the Sharks Audio Network starting at 12:30 Pacific time with our pregame show. The game on May 11th will start at 7 o'clock with our pregame show starting 30 minutes prior. You can watch all Barracuda games on AHL TV through the Sharks Plus SAP Center app and at sjbarracuda.com/listen. We had a chance to recently catch up with Sharks goalie consultant Adam Francilia. When we come back, we'll play part of that interview. This is CUDA Confidential. Welcome back to CUDA Confidential. I recently had an opportunity to sit down with Sharks goalie consultant Adam Francilia. Without further ado, let's throw it to that interview with Francilia. What's your earliest childhood memory of hockey? What got you into the game, and what do you remember from a very, very early age?
Well, I think growing up in Canada, obviously, you start watching hockey, really early. It's so ingrained in our culture. Growing up, not too far from Vancouver, I probably grew up about 30 minutes at that point outside of Vancouver. And so the Canucks were, certainly the home team that we cheered for. And, it was part of everything, back then, the hockey card craze was in full steam. And so, it's what you talked about at school. It's, you traded hockey cards. You did knockdowns and farthesies for hockey cards. We probably did that with some Gretzky rookies too. Looking at one that just sold for $1.29 million, we were probably throwing around some valuable hockey cards back then. But it's part of what you did. You watched hockey, you fell in love with it. One of the things I remember from being, fairly young is, that's when the Edmonton Oilers dynasty was happening, with Gretzky and Messier. And, that was sort of, they were fairly close, obviously, being the next province over. So that really sort of spilled over to, what was going on, out our way. And, it just, you just don't ever really remember you know, you just don't really ever remember not being into hockey, you know, and you playing street hockey and, you know, it's just what everybody does. So that's part of the, you know, it's sort of almost like a religion in Canada. So it's just part of what you grow up with.
Well, clearly you have a background in how the body works and how things are connected with the brain and the mental aspects. So you're an intelligent guy who certainly could have went a different path, but did you always envision yourself staying within sports and really, really staying within hockey? Is that something you always said that you wanted to kind of be involved with?
Well, I think, you know, for me, becoming a sports performance, you know, initially more of like a trainer, but, you know, getting into sports performance for me, I was always drawn to the elite end of sports performance. You know, for me, it was always something that, you know, especially when I started to work with athletes, what really, really excited me the most, what really motivated and inspired me the most was challenging myself to be able to be effective for the very, very best at that particular endeavor. So, and once again, sort of, you know, where we live, the sport that had the greatest number of, you know, potential high end, you know, top end performers was hockey, just by sheer number. And also, you know, by the fact that, you know, in Canada, that's the sport that, you know, you do have the greatest chance of sort of making it big. And so that always, you know, that always was the most exciting part for me. You know, I've always said that hockey is an incredibly easy game, but it's a very complicated sport. So in other words, the overall idea of the gameplay is quite simple, but the demands of the athlete that plays it is tremendously complex because unlike any other sport, it's played on skates. So the planes of motion, the movement patterns, the amount of amplitude, which is basically like force generation, force absorption, is unlike any other sport just because it is. You are on a blade, you are on ice. So all the glide coefficient and the different friction aspects of it. And so there's a lot of, you know, whether you're a skater or a goaltender, there are a lot of factors that are somewhat unnatural. Just because of the way we're able to move on the ice. So for me, I just, you know, it was just became a, you know, almost like an obsession with different, you know, problem solving. And from then, you know, trying to sort of not stand pat on what the status quo was in regards to, you know, training, you know, the performance aspect of hockey. So for me, it was always sort of the mindset of observing, studying, researching, innovating, creating. And, you know, that was, you know, I mean, I started doing that 23 years ago, and I'm probably, I would say my inspiration level after 23 years is even greater than it was when I started. So I was always drawn to it. It was always my favorite sport, and the cream of the crop was always sort of the favorite level for me to train because it demanded the most out of what I was able to do. So that's sort of what, you know, that's sort of what lit my fire.
So I think we've talked about it before, but you didn't play goal as a kid. So being now a quote unquote goalie guru, you took a little bit of a unique path to get there. But I've got to ask, when did that kind of that switch and that light bulb turn on for you that you may have a knack for the position and have an understanding through your background that maybe others wouldn't have, because the approach you have seems to be a unique one.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, for whatever reason, and I don't think I really realized this until many, many, many years later, but, you know, when I watched the game, for whatever reason, just innately, I always seemed to watch it from the goaltender out, or from the goaltender's experience. And so, you know, I mean, you know, looking back, I know that when I'd watch hockey with my friends, you know, you'd see a forward, make a play, you know, come from outside, inside, make a move. And, you know, it was a really high, you know, a kind of a grade A scoring opportunity, and the goalie would make a save. And, you know, the reaction amongst most people was, you know, being excited for, you know, the near miss or whatever that the, you know, the forward had. For me, it was always more exciting when the goalie made the save. I always saw it from that perspective. So for whatever reason, you know, I, I was a pretty high level goaltender in soccer. So I don't know if there's sort of a bit of that built in mentality. Whenever we played street hockey, you know, I always wanted to be the goaltender when I had those options. So for whatever reason, I really realized that I really paid a lot of attention to, you know, the goaltender's place in the game. And so as things moved along and, you know, like I said, I became really interested in analyzing the sport, you know, back then. And I mean, we're talking probably even 15 years ago, you know, I really noticed that the goaltenders were really not, you know, nobody really took much time to consider what the needs of that position were. And they were just sort of bunched in, you know, with the rest of the players. And, you know, I've said for years, I mean, goaltenders, they're playing a different sport. They're just on the ice at the same time as the other guys. And I think as a, you know, for me, really realizing that, almost approaching the study of it like a different sport, you know, has sort of, you know, for me, it's created a completely different mental paradigm in how I see the position, how I see it technically, how I see it biomechanically, nervous system, et cetera. And then, you know, the things to do to be able to, you know, to be able to address, you know, any of the neurological hiccups or any of the biomechanical hiccups that I see. So it was just always something that was there, and I didn't really know it was there until I probably started working with hockey teams in general.
Give us an idea of some of your concepts as a whole, maybe like a Cliff Notes version of approaching, I guess, a client, a goaltender in the NHL, approaching a new client.
Well, first off, you know, a matter of, for me, it's a matter of observation, you know, analyzing. I have to look at things very, very, in a very, very isolated manner, a lot different than, you know, a lot of people see the game or even the position. For me, after all this time, I sort of have the ability to see the body through the gear while it's playing, because obviously, you know, the goaltending gear is so big that it sort of hides a, like I always say, is the gear sort of hides a multitude of sins on what's happening in, you know, below it, at, you know, on the body. And so to be able to take a look at that, to be able to take a look at how the, some of the neurological tendencies or hiccups affect a goaltender's instantaneous physical response. So, I mean, I look at it really on a tremendously deep and multilateral level, I think. And I'll tell you, I think the sheer fact that I, you know, the fact that I never actually grew up playing goaltender, I think has allowed me to adopt kind of a very unorthodox and unique viewpoint on it. And I think that's actually been a tremendous advantage for me. So, you know, so again, very analytical in an unorthodox way. And the other thing too, you know, that's been really great is over the last decade plus, well, I guess probably closer to 15 years now, I really made a commitment to, you know, to learn the position, from every viewpoint, you know, from the goaltending coach viewpoint, from, you know, from the gameplay viewpoint. And I've had a chance to be on the ice with some world-class goalie coaches that have been incredibly gracious and were excited to collaborate with me to learn, you know, what I know, but at the same time teaching me a tremendous amount, because what's helped me, you know, do a better job of what I do is staying completely up to date with the current concepts of goaltending, where the game is, how the position is played, because it evolves so rapidly. So, you know, all those factors have played into my philosophy, which is ever changing. So that's sort of, you know, that's what I look at when I look at a prospective client. And then from then, it's a matter of unwinding everything to the fundamentals of stance and structure and what that means from a physical and neurological point of view. And then once we get that right, then it completely influences every read reaction and save selection that they're able to make off of it. So there, in a lot of cases, there's a bit of a mental rewire before we actually manifest anything physically.
A big thanks to Sharks goaltending consultant, Adam Francilia. I'm Nick Nolenberger saying thanks for listening, and so long until next time.